Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, let me grab the headphones. I'm going to get dialed into the studio. Get these dogs to shut up. Oh, goodness. I better close the window or the neighbors are going to get mad. Hope the guests call in tonight. I wonder if anybody's going to call in. Well, let's do this thing.
It's Rated G Radio, and this is your host, Garrett Miller.
Hey everybody, it's the last day of July, and what a great way to celebrate the end of the month by having two fantastic guests on the show tonight. We're going to have Bogano and Patty. Trucker Patty is going to be on the line, and they're going to talk about the documentary that they've made in this past year that's receiving critical acclaim at film festivals all over the place. We're going to talk to them about that and so much more. But before I bring them on the line, because I see them in the studio hotline right now, so thanks guys for calling in on time. I need to tell you that when I put this out here, that Trucker Patty was going to be on the show tonight, from a few days ago to, you know, telling this, you know, people in passing, the world went nuts. And the overwhelming theme that I kept getting back from everybody is like, we love Trucker Patty! Oh, my God! So Trucker Patty is a celebrity, and she has this incredible following from calling into, you know, Sirius OutQ, and we'll ask her about that as well. But huge, huge response just from the mention of the name Trucker Patty, and people just go absolutely nuts, like they've lost their mind, in the best ways possible. So I'm really excited. I had the chance to meet both of these fine people earlier this month, and we'll talk about that in just a second as well. But in the meantime, I want to just welcome both of our guests to the show. We've got Trucker Patty, and then we've got Bo Gano on the line right now. Welcome to Rated G Radio. Thanks for calling in tonight.
Hi, Garrett.
How are you?
I'm doing great. Isn't this off-site kind of thing exciting and fun and scary at the same time?
I would say so, definitely. But I want to correct one thing real quick.
What's that?
It's Bo Gano.
What is it? It's Ja. Didn't I?
Soft G. It's a soft G.
I prefer a soft G. You know, there we go. Thank you. Bo Gano is on, don't you know? So there we go.
Now, I grew up, this is going to give away my age a little bit, but I grew up during those whole Bono's commercials. So with a name like Bo, don't you know. The personal hell I went through.
Well, now that we have the official introductions out of the way, again, a big, big heartfelt thanks to having both of you here on the show tonight. I want to talk to both of you about the movie experience, but also have you tell the listeners a little bit about each of yourselves independently, kind of like the what led up to making of the documentary here that we're going to talk about in a second. Bo, can we start with you and tell us a little bit about yourself, where you grew up, what your experience is in filmmaking, and why you do what you do?
I would love to. I'm Bo. I grew up in the northern suburbs of Illinois, kind of a unique, kind of interesting childhood. I grew up going to private Christian school from the grades 6 until I graduated from college. I actually went to the same college as Billy Graham in Wheaton, Illinois.
Wow.
And you may have heard of my college recently in the news, the one that I went to, a Wheaton College, who the Supreme Court decided did not have to live up to the Constitution and gave them some kind of a religious exemption of some sort or another. So we're very proud of them.
Isn't it always interesting how those kind of things work out? You kind of wonder if somebody's, you know, made an extra private donation to somebody's campaign fund or something like that.
Having gone through the experience of, you know, my years at the college, I really do understand. It is a very politically connected college. I'm really disappointed in that it's taken its prestigious reputation and very much sullied it and brought it down to this level. I'm very, very disappointed. When I went there, it was a very prestigious thing to do, and we were considered a very academically challenging college. And I'm very concerned that all of this nastiness and politics has really taken it to down and brought it down to the Bob Jones level.
Do you think, though, and not to get sidetracked on education, because that's a whole different show altogether, but do you think that a lot of the stuff that's going on politically is really done at, like, the administration or, the higher level offices, and it really is not trickled down to how the university may teach or educate the students that go there? So it's kind of like, they're off doing whatever, but I'm still getting my classes in. Do you think that they're still getting quality education there?
I can't answer that. But it concerns me. I can't answer that. It concerns me. Anyway, that's a little bit of a sidetrack. I left Illinois, as you can imagine, in October of such and such a year because winter was coming. And I had a friend that I went to school with who was living out in California, in West Hollywood in particular, who said, "Why don't you move out here?" And I thought, "I can't just up and move." And he's like, "Why can't you?"
Right.
And I thought about it and was like, "Well, you're right. Why can't I?" So I packed up my belongings and, like the Beverly Hillbillies, I moved to Beverly Hills.
Well,
West Hollywood, that is.
West Hollywood, that is. Now, did you go to school for filmmaking, or what did you go to college for?
No, I studied psychology, and if I'd actually been looking forward to what my career had become, I would have specialized in child psychology. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to say that out loud, but that's my running joke. I worked with a bunch of adult children.
So how did you get started in film, then?
I was in Los Angeles. I came here for the weather and the ocean, and yeah. I found out that there were temp agencies that specialized in the film industry, and I thought, when in Rome, and that's kind of what led me down the path and got me into the entertainment industry. That led me to, a six-week stint at CBS Records. I worked at a company called Fry's Entertainment, and then I worked at a company called Canon Pictures, and it was a Canon Pictures that led me to meet a producer who, the day that I was going to ask her to work with her, and she actually got let go. And so a month later, when I was let go from the company, and I called her up, and she's like, welcome to the club, because she had heard what had happened. She was like, "I'm producing a music video in 2 weeks. You want to work as a PA?" And I was like, "Sure, why not?" And so that led me down the path of working as a production assistant on music videos. And that sort of thing. And then, from there, my career kind of just, took on a life of its own.
Well, when did you decide that you wanted to be behind the camera yourself and kind of, rule the world and tell your own story?
Well, it's funny because I was actually just showing a friend of mine a music video that I produced back in the very early 1990s. And so I think it's been since way back then that I've had this producing bug. And, my career path kind of led down the field of post-production and feature film post-production. And so by being the guide to these directors through that pathway, I've been able to, express a bit of my creativity and actually get a chance to work with some of the most extraordinary up-and-coming filmmakers of our time. So it's been a very lucky, blessed career in many, many ways.
So, Patty, if I can jump to you for just a second here, because I think at some point it's going to lead up to you guys actually meeting in person. Can you kind of give us a little bit of background from, when you were growing up and what your experience was and how you guys ended up connecting up?
Okay, well, I'll try to make it as brief as possible. I lived in Wisconsin in the south suburbs of Milwaukee till I was 14. My parents had split up when I was 6, and my mother had gone to California, and I followed after her. When I was 14, we lived in Granada Hills in the valley for a couple of years and moved up to Modesto, which is where I went to high school. I needed to get away from home. My stepfather was a problem. Our family business was a liquor store, and I worked like a slave there, and he was not a pleasant person. So without telling anybody, in the middle of my senior year of high school, I took the test for the GED. I had talked to a Navy recruiter who had sent me to San Diego to the band down there to audition for the Navy's music program. I passed the audition and was guaranteed the band after I got out of boot camp, and that was what happened. I was stationed in north of Chicago at Great Lakes Naval Training Center band there for 3 years, and then I went to a very unique group in New Orleans called the Navy SEAL Band. We beat on oil barrels from Trinidad, and that sort of got me into the performing bug, and it was a couple of years after that that I realized that I wasn't who I was supposed to be, and I had met my first gay people and got put in drag and started doing drag shows in the French Quarter. And that was just, you know, all down the path of self-discovery, and I realized that I needed to be a woman. The Navy was not going to let me be a woman, so I basically turned myself in. The CO was not happy with me. He wanted to give me a dishonorable discharge. And I basically said, well, you didn't catch me doing anything wrong. You have to catch me doing something wrong to basically court-martial me and give me a dishonorable discharge. I said, do I need to get a lawyer? And 2 days later, I had my general under honorable conditions discharge, and I was off the base and out of the Navy. And
hey, Patty,
from there,
a real quick follow-up question, because I've heard part of the story before. How common was it for a person, well, in your case, you know, somebody who said, you know what, I'm going to be transgender, and we're going to have you talk about that in a second, but how common was it for someone in your particular situation to get an honorable discharge at that point in history? Because when I've heard that in the past and heard you tell that story, I was like, somebody must have really not wanted to deal with whatever to just say, let's just make this go away.
Well, from what I understand, it wasn't something that was common at all. Generally, the way that LGBT people were treated by the military in those days is usually you had to get caught doing something you weren't supposed
to,
basically, you know, having sex with somebody of the same gender, and then they would kick you out because you had broken one of the Uniform Code of Military Justice's articles. And I think that the part of the reason, too, was that I had to prove that I was gay. They sent NCIS over to my apartment so they could take pictures of my drag clothes. And they were extremely disappointed when I didn't have any gay pornography, because they thought that all gay people had to have gay pornography, and they were sure I must be hiding my gay pornography someplace. And I think what it was, you know, the fact that I was going to put up a fuss. I was in a unit that was very public. We did a lot of work for Navy recruiting. I'd been on television several times.
Wow.
And I think they just wanted me to go away quietly, I believe.
Okay. And I guess that makes perfect sense. I guess, you know, the squeaky wheel, you know, always gets attention, and they didn't need a squeaky wheel at that point.
Well, yeah, that, and plus they didn't catch me doing anything I wasn't supposed to.
Right, exactly. So, I mean, they were kind of caught between a rock and a hard place, and you just wanted to get on with your life. So after you left the Navy SEALs.
Jared, I want to introduce a couple of side notes in here, and that, you know,
please.
Patty says that she lived in Milwaukee, which is, you know, only about 40 miles north of where I grew up. She went to Navy training at Great Lakes Naval Base, which is where I was a lifeguard many years after she was there. So it's really funny, a number of the ways that Patty and I, as we've gotten to know each other, have seen how our paths have kind of crossed in many different ways in many different incarnations. So there were connections going on throughout all of this time that neither one of us had any understandings about.
You were so destined to meet.
another very important connection, too, was Bo hadn't said anything yet about, he had a very good friend that he did a lot of ACT-UP stuff with back in the late 80s, a transgendered woman named Connie Norman, who was basically from the same generation that I was, had her surgery around the same time that I did. And so there was some commonalities there that we discovered when we actually met.
It's true. One of the first things that I did when I moved to Los Angeles, obviously I didn't have a job and didn't have a whole lot of things to do, and the friend that I was staying with said, well, here's this rally. You should probably go hang out here and get involved. Hint, hint, wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Right.
And so I did, and I actually ended up spending the whole week out in front of it happened to be the ACT UP camp in at the steps of County USC Hospital in downtown. And I ended up spending the whole week there living in a tent. And one of the people that I did get to know was Connie Norman, who was not only a pioneer in AIDS activism and transgender activism, but was also actually a pioneer in queer radio out of LA, and was involved in I forget the channel. It was the one out of San Diego, Mexico, that we couldn't actually get here in Los Angeles. But she was very instrumental back in the late 80s, early 90s in that movement as well. And she taught me how to be an activist.
Awesome. Well, and the world needs more of you. Patty, can I ask a really, you and I have had a chance to talk just a tiny little bit, and I mean, and I listen to the same shows that you listen to, and so I kind of get it, but can you do me a huge favor for everybody that's listening to my show? This is probably the first time, unless they're OutQ listeners, this is the first time they've probably ever heard somebody who's a transgender person on the radio actually telling their story. Can you kind of share what transgender means for you and your experience?
Well, my experience is from my very earliest memories, from 3 and 4 years old, I always knew something was wrong with me. My mother and my aunts tell me that at 3 years old, I was telling them that there was something wrong, that I was supposed to be a girl. Growing up, my friends were girls. I did boy things because I had to, but I was never comfortable. I wasn't comfortable with my body, and I grew up in an area, in a place where nothing was ever talked about as far as gay or queer. I didn't even know what any of that meant. I sort of got an idea by the time I was in junior high school that queer was a bad thing, and it was boys who liked boys, and I liked boys, and I knew that was wrong, and so I tried to get away from it. And then with me, I have Klinefelter syndrome, which means that I have an extra chromosome. You know, girls have XX, boys have XY, I'm XXY. So when I went through puberty, I developed breasts. And so there was that whole confusion about that, the teasing, and the way that I dealt with it, because I had, you know, so many girls in my life, I always had a girlfriend, and that was kind mm-hmm. of the way that I stayed, because I was very, very feminine. I had a lot more trouble passing myself off as a male than I ever did passing myself off as a female.
Wow. And so did you have anything that really, because I just can't even imagine going through that today, and today is such a different world than it was, you know, 20 or 30 years ago when you were, you know, going through everything that you were going through. Did you have any moment where you just said, you know, I just can't take this anymore, or, boy, I just don't know what to do? Where did you turn?
When I was 14, my stepmother had left a copy of Christine Jorgensen's book around, which is basically the first transgendered woman that anybody had ever heard of.
Okay.
And I read that book, and I didn't totally understand it, but for some reason it gave me hope. I mean, I used to, when I say my prayers at night, I would pray that I would wake up a girl, and that just went on for so long. That,
oh,
I mean,
wow.
you have to live a life. I
yeah.
liked people, and so I did my best to keep myself as busy as possible, but it wasn't until I was in the Navy and my friends were getting married that I made one of the biggest mistakes of my life. I married my best friend who was a woman and just put her through hell because she was really in love with me. And there was just something that was telling me, well, if you get married, everything will be all right. All these other things will go away. You'll be normal, which is all I ever really wanted. And so I did a horrible thing to this beautiful woman. And, you know, and that was the thing that finally made me come to terms with it. You know, I didn't know, other than what I had read with Christine Jorgensen's book, which I didn't really understand, I didn't know really what trans was. So I just didn't, why must be gay because I'm a boy who likes boys. And, you know, when I got into that community, I was in New Orleans, and my first gay bar was the Bourbon Pub, which is still there on Bourbon Street. And, you know, I met wonderful gay people there and made friends, but I still didn't fit in. And then somebody got me to do drag, and basically because they dressed me up for Halloween and everybody thought I was a fag hag. They didn't think I was a boy in drag. And I loved the whole performing aspect. I loved, you know, being a performing musician, and, you know, all of that stuff was fun to me. So drag was just, you know, my creative outlet. It was fun for me. But the more that I explored that, the more I realized that I needed to be a woman. I had no idea in hell how I was going to figure that out, how I was going to make that happen. I didn't know about the client filters yet. That was discovered a few years later at Stanford University's gender dysphoria clinic. They sent me to an endocrinologist, which discovered the XXY thing. And so it was just, you know, this is, we're talking about late 70s here, and it was just one new discovery after another, and several series of happy accidents, getting the right kind of health insurance that at that point in time, because of the Klinefelters, actually paid for the surgery. You know, I was blessed in a lot of ways. So many of my trans sisters, you know, have a terrible time transitioning because they have a hard time passing. I never went through any of that. As soon as I started dressing as a woman, people accepted me as one. And so in many ways, I was very blessed for what I had to go through. Yes, there were some bad times. I've been beaten up. I'm a rape survivor. I try not to dwell on all those negative things because there's been so much more positive in my life and so many wonderful things that have happened.
Well, one of those things that I think is really happy for a lot of folks is when Sirius OutQ came on the line, and, you know, whether it's Channel 106 or 109 or 111 or, you know, like they always joke, you know, we change the channel once a year just to see what happens. But that came on the line for you on satellite radio. And how did that change your life?
I'm gonna interject here really quick because there's a funny story that goes with that, Garrett. You may have noticed in the end credits, because obviously you've seen the film. I do give credit to SiriusXM OutQ, and they actually did have a channel number there, and even I got it wrong, and so I had to delete it because it was the wrong channel number. And then right before the movie got released, they moved channels anyway. So I was very glad that I had done that. So in my end credits, I think SiriusXM OutQ and no number, and it's off center by a little bit because I had to delete the number, and I'm glad that I did.
That's funny.
That was so hysterically funny to me, too, because Bo calls me up and is in this panic, you know, and he's been leading me through this whole filmmaking process because I had no idea about what was to be done. You know, my participation was driving my truck, looking pretty and telling stories. Everything else has been Bo's creation and his little team that he put together. But he calls me up all in a panic about this, and I said, Bo, relax. I said, it's out to you. It doesn't matter what channel. It's just relax. Because we were getting very, very close to Outfest and the premiere, and, you know, he had so much going on in his shoulders. I was afraid for his sanity there for a little bit.
Well, let's back up, because before we get to any of the premiere and the Outfest and all of that, I wanted to kind of back up to where you guys finally had fate intervene and bring you two together. So who wants to dive in deep on that fun story?
Well, I'll tell a little bit about how I got on OutQ, and then Bo could tell the story of how we actually met and stuff. But I had been back in the closet for 25 years because the psychiatric minds of the time when I transitioned had told me if I wanted to live a normal life that I needed to not tell. And for 25 years, I didn't. Neither of the men that I married knew about my past. My family was complicit. They were just happy that I had the XXY thing so they could look at something biological and say, oh, that's my past life she is. And so, you know, that was what I did. And living with that secret all those years, it just wore on me and wore on me and wore on me until I just couldn't stand it. And I had heard from other truckers about this satellite radio. And I thought, well, you know, I've been spending a hell of a lot of money on audiobooks. I didn't like talking on the CB anymore because there were too many perverts on the CB. So I thought, well, I'll try this satellite radio thing. And I made the happy accident of getting the Sirius as opposed to the XM at the time because Sirius had OutQ. At that time, XM did not. I discovered OutQ. I started listening, and I started getting involved. And one of the people that I met and became friends with was another truck driver who was a lesbian. And she, after we got to know each other, she told me, she says, you need to come back out. And I said, what the hell do you mean? And she says, Patty, you've been back in the closet all these years. You need to tell people your story. And so I came back out again. And now Bill will tell you how we met.
There we go.
And I knew about Sirius and XM, and I knew very well why I was getting XM, and I got Sirius radio for a reason, and was listening, and, you know, I work, a lot of my job is working from home. As long as I have an internet connection and a cell phone, I can pretty much work anywhere that I want. And now I include my Sirius XM radio with that. And so I would listen to, you know, the Frank DeCaro show in the morning. I would listen to Cinderella in the afternoon, and then I'd listen to Derek and Romaine in the evening. And it would go without saying that I would hear certain people call in. And Patty was one of those people, and Trucker Patty. And I specifically remember hearing, I believe it was the Derek and Romaine show, where one guy called in and was like, oh, just how do I get one of those cool nicknames like Trucker Patty that people know me when I call in? And Derek and Romaine are like, well, you give the screener that name when you call in. It's simple. You know, so I had known of her and, you know, knew a bit about her. And about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, Derek and the Derek and Romaine show did what they called a listener cruise, where they basically said, we're going to go on this cruise, and if you want to join us, great, join us. Here's where we're going to be. And there were about 30 of us who joined them. We like to refer to those as the original cruise bitches, the OCBs.
The OCBs.
and a registered trademark, don't forget. And Patty happened to be one of the people. Patty and I happened to be, you know, two of the 30 people. And, you know, Patty's a very open person, willing to share anything. And if anybody has any questions about what it's like to be trans, anything, blah, 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 for feel free. And she asked me, and I was like, no, I don't have any questions. I pretty much know the process. You know, I had that Connie Norman experience. I've had a couple of other experiences that really just was like, yeah, it's no big deal to me. It's, you know, it's the mill. And that kind of led to our friendship in that there, I didn't look at her as an oddity. I didn't look at her in any weird way. I just looked at her as a normal person. Because in my mind, I've known this woman for 4 years.
Right.
She's just a normal person, you know?
She's your friend,
you call
right?
Normal, well, you spoke badly about perverts, so I had to. so yeah, and so part of this, how this all came about, Garrett, was is that, you know, in my mind, you know, being that I'm a psychology major, you know, a number of the other people, the OCBs, were truck drivers. Danny and Chad. I think there might have been a couple of others in there, but the idea, you know, I'm always looking for story ideas. It's what I do. I'm a storyteller at the end of the day, and so I'm always looking for good stories to tell. And what my mind was wrapping around was, hey, truck drivers, you're already in this isolated group, being gay, lesbian, trans, bisexual, whatever your label happens to be. You're already in this isolated group, and now you're going off to be a truck driver, which makes you even more isolated from people. I mean, this is Patty was doing this back in the early 90s, the late 80s, when there wasn't the social media, there wasn't computers, there wasn't all of this. There weren't any ways to stay in touch with other people. And so you're putting yourself in this very isolated bubble. And psychologically, that fascinated me. And so originally I wanted to, you know, ride with Danny and Chad and follow their story, and ride with Patty and follow her story, and ride with, you know, Bobby and a couple of the other truckers that I felt like I knew from listening to them for five,
right,
6 years of radio. And, you know, obviously I'm not made of money. I wish I were, but I'm not. And so I had to pick and choose how I went about it. And I've had this conversation. I actually had this conversation with Buck Angel. And I'm going to use words that don't necessarily describe the intent, but they're only the only words I know how to use. And that I decided to go with Trucker Patty because I wanted to exploit the most sensational aspect of documentary that I was trying to do, in that, you know, transgender truck driver is sensational. And it gets headlines. People take notice, you know. And by exploit, I wanted to use that as a way to get other people interested in the project and be able to propel it forward, you know. And so that's kind of how all of this came about. And it was through conversations with Danny that I actually approached Patty about riding in the truck with her.
There you go. And this all happened like kind of like on the cruise, right?
That was March. The cruise was in March, and by the beginning of July, I was on the truck with Patty.
You're on the truck with Patty. So tell us about that journey, because you were with her for, you might think, you know, you're going to be filming a movie for like 6 months, but you were with her for a fairly short period of time to get all of the information that you got.
Yeah, we were on the truck for about, it was 10 days, and on the truck, we weren't actually on the truck the whole 10 days. What happened was is I drove out to Ontario, California, where, you know, come to find out a number of our driving friends, you know, sit for days at a time waiting to turn around and go on. We have other, you know, cruise friends, Larry and Damien, who live in the area. And so I was going out there and, you know, on like almost a weekly, every other week basis to have lunch or dinner with them and Danny and Chad. And Patty was coming in, and we made arrangements for me to meet out there and to hop on the truck with her and to spend the next 10 days, you know, filming her. I kind of knew before getting on the truck, obviously Patty and I had chatted and had worked out a number of the logistical issues. I knew enough of her story that I had a structure of what I wanted to ask. I knew every day, at the beginning of each day, I knew where I wanted that day's conversations to go, and at the end of the day, I would reassess where my next day wanted to go. And so basically, from the time we got on the truck, I would start up the cameras, line Patty up, saying, this is the section I want to cover, and let her start talking. One of the things that I found...
Just wind me up and turn me loose. That's all you got to do.
In so many words, you know, and she would talk, and what I found myself having to do is, and it's one of the things that a friend of mine pointed out in one of the early rough cuts, is that you see me in some of the wider shots. You actually see me over in the passenger seat, you know, trying to occupy myself with my iPad or my iPhone or a book or something, so that she wouldn't keep turning and looking at me.
At the camera, and I kept turning over to look at him like you would in a normal conversation with the person, because I was a little worried about how I was going to deal with the cameras in the truck. And truthfully, after the first couple of minutes, I completely forgot they were there. And for me, it was just having a conversation with a new good friend and getting to know each other. So I didn't feel uncomfortable at all. You know, I've been telling people lately, hey, I'll work for a plane ticket to LA. I like this acting, this being on jealousy.
So how many cameras did you have in the truck?
I would only have one camera working at any given time.
Okay.
And just to give a little bit of background to everybody, I use the GoPro cameras. I use the very simple, basic GoPro Hero 3. Nothing fancy. I had a couple of mounts that I was able to use. The most important thing was I had no lighting setup whatsoever. I did nothing in regards to lighting. If I had it to do over again, I would do a bit more research into the quality of the audio that I recorded, because being in a semi-truck was a bit loud, and I didn't do any other microphone setup to kind of compensate for that. And so that's kind of why there are the issues in the documentary that I do have. However, I do like the organicness of it. If I had more money, I would go with the Hero Black, because the Hero Black does shoot in true 24 HD, which for all of those geeks out there listening, I had to shoot in 30 frames per second instead of 24 and then convert it, because that's the only thing that the Hero 3 shoots in.
Okay, so all of that technical stuff just went way over my head, but it sounded really impressive.
I
think I look much better with the GoPros than I would in HD, though. they're not very forgiving.
You were in all of that, everything that we shot, Patty, was in true 1920 1080 HD. So you were actually in HD. So.
Well, then I look fabulous.
Then you look fabulous.
We were in 30 frames as opposed to 24 frames, and everything in this day and age pretty much runs at 24 frames, and so there was some interpolation that had to happen. But that's neither here nor there. And basically what would happen is I would find an angle to shoot her at, and because I couldn't look through the camera and see that it was, I would use a USB cord to kind of measure from the lens to her nose to make sure that I was actually aiming it in the right direction. I'd turn it on and let her talk for the length of the memory card. And then as soon as the memory card would fill up, I would switch out cameras, download that material, archive it to a separate drive, you know, backing it all up, erased it, charged that battery back up so that I could always had a camera sitting and waiting that I could switch out. And given how our story correlates with SiriusXM and OutKew, this is how bizarre our day would go, in that we would start out driving at whatever time we would start out driving, and there really wasn't that much time between that and the time Frank's show would start, so we didn't bother hooking up the cameras. And then Frank's show would start, and we would listen to Frank's show, his show would end, we'd hook up the camera, we'd record until Derek and Romaine's show came on, and then we'd listen to Derek and Romaine's show. So, I mean, it was a really hard, grueling 12 hours of camera shooting and all of that for us.
Tell them how many hours of film you actually shot and how many minutes you edited it down to. That is what fascinates me more than anything else. It shows a lot of those, as well as his editor, Charlize Tortani's genius and what they did.
We ended up with about 35 hours worth of footage. Now, that does include a lot of times where I would just take the camera and, you know, either point it out the front windshield of the truck and just shoot a bunch of driving footage, or, you know, mount it on the side and shoot it out of the passenger side window, which, you know, for those of you who haven't seen the movie, is a really beautiful closing shot of a beautiful sunset as we were driving through. Correct me if I'm wrong here, Patty, but I believe it was Wyoming. And
yes,
it was just a beautiful sunset shot that I just happened to catch because the cameras were going there, that I used for our end credit shot. So it did include a lot of that type of footage. But I was able to cut the story down to about 2.5 hours, and that included all of the major talking points and items that I wanted to broach on and touch on. And it was from that 2.5 hour assembly that Charlize then was able to cut it down to the 14-minute piece that you're seeing today.
Because that just really stuns me, shocks me, everything. I want to get to Outfest in just a second here, but the thing from watching your movie is knowing that, you know, number one, you shot tons of footage that didn't make it on here, but to realize that this is so expertly put together that 15 minutes of the film that you have, it flows well, and it tells a great story, and it's cohesive, and you want to hear more. You really want that 2.5 hour, you know, unedited DVD or Blu-ray, hopefully, that will come out. But, you know, in that 15 minutes, you learn quite a bit about what Patty went through. And that, to me, I didn't know any of that.
We jammed a lot of information in that 14 minutes, and I really, it's just boom, 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 you know. And there's a couple of breathing points where, you know, you just actually do get to go, and then you're right back into it, you know.
Yeah.
But, I had to, you know, I didn't know any other way to do it. Unfortunately, with a lot of the other material that we have, due to legal reasons and issues and things like that, there's not a whole lot of chance that a lot of it's going to see the light of day. As a documentary entity, I think that there's a couple of areas that we're kind of focusing on now, which is, you know, there's been talk of, you know, doing kind of a one-woman show where someone would act as Patty and be able to express on stage these experiences that she's gone through. The other layer of the onion that we're looking at is being able to tell her story in a fictional format, thereby, you know, covering our behind,
yep,
so to speak.
Yep.
Legally, and saying, you know, no, this is all fiction and embellished, and be able to go through some of the things that we didn't broach in the subject. And I'm hoping,
gosh,
not to talk out of line here, but, you know, Garrett, after each one of these husbands that I talk about in the documentary, what I don't go into is the fact that Patty spent a minimum of a week afterwards in a psychiatric facility processing these separations and divorces. And even while going through those situations, not once did Patty ever express to her psychologist, any of her attending physicians, what the underlying factors were.
Oh,
that
my gosh.
These doctors are as ignorant to her transgenderedness as her ex-husbands were. In that,
wow.
How do you deal with these mental issues that you're dealing with when you're not facing the mental issues that you're dealing with? That's how deep the secret went, and how life-shattering, living with these types of secrets can and is to people.
Well, I want to bring you back here to Outfest, because that's when I got the chance to visit with you guys in person. And number one, huge, huge treat. Out of probably all the things that I've gotten to do so far in the year, meeting the two of you has absolutely been my highlight. So I need to give you loud props for, number one, taking the time to invite me, but then making me feel so welcome to the event when you had the film debut. I will tell you, I really am not that cultured. I am not that worldly. I'm not that whatever. And to number one, meet you, Patty, was a huge treat for me. But then to sit in the Trans Short Film Festival day, there's probably the official word for it, in an audience that I don't really relate to in a lot of ways, I was blown away about how cool these people were and what great stories they had and what different experiences they all brought to the table and what amazing films were being shown, animation and everything.
What I want to say about that is you sort of hit the nail on the head about my whole motivation for doing this film. I feel like within the LGBT community, there is such a lack of knowledge of the trans experience. I can't tell
right.
you how many gay men and lesbians that I have met that have absolutely no knowledge of the trans experience, have a lot
no
of questions, which is why that I have made myself as open as I could possibly be. And, you know, when I would meet people, encourage them to ask any question. Nothing was off limits. I wanted them to understand because there are so many trans people, trans women especially, who are just living lives of absolute horror because they can't get jobs, because they can't get help, because people don't, even in our own community, do not take time to try to understand them and help them. And so my whole motivation for doing this film was to try and put a face on a trans person and premiere it at OutFest in the community to try and help educate people about the trans experience and make it such to where maybe it was in some way relatable to them.
And it totally was. And if I can thank anybody, number one, I'm going to thank you, but if I can also thank, you know, like Frank and Doria, who were always saying, you know, if you're going to go to OutFest, go to something that you're going to be completely not expecting to see, or something that would be completely unfamiliar to you, because that's where you're going to learn, and that's where you're really going to find some really interesting people and great experiences. And that's exactly what happened, because if you just said, well, let's go to OutFest, I probably would have picked a whole different range of pictures to kind of target. And I had a fantastic time watching every single short that was there, but especially, you know, Trucker Patty, your documentary, which got a huge round. I think you were like the shining star of the entire auditorium, because everybody went nuts when all we had to say is, trrr. We didn't have to get out Trucker. It was just trrr. And then the place went nuts.
I have to fully admit and come clear here that I completely stacked that audience.
That's
you know,
fine.
One of the nice things about OutFest, and I'm really honored that we did get to have our world premiere at OutFest, is that I've been a member of OutFest since the early 90s. I saw OutFest as my film community. I saw OutFest as my gay community really early on in my, you know, career as a filmmaker, and have been a supporter of them for a very long time. So being able to have our world premiere with them was a very personal joy for me. And it was actually really fun to get to hang out with my fellow filmmakers in the program. I got to know them rather well, and that was a joy.
And
so
I tell you what, I had the most amazing time, the most amazing experience. It's one of the highlights of my life. Some of the things that I got to see that I would never have thought to go to, like the looking panel. That was amazingly fun, and I didn't even know what the series was about. But just the people that I met, and everybody was so warm and welcoming. And, I mean, people that people know, like Alec Mappa and Candace Kane and Kathy DeBono, and, you know, people who just floored me when they said, oh, I've heard about you. I really want to meet you. And people
See?
Were just so wonderful, warm, welcoming, and kind. And, I want to say publicly right now to everybody that I met that made me feel so welcome, thank you for one of the highlights of my entire life.
And with all that being said, I have to apologize to all of the people who, you know, I've known all these people for many, many years, and I introduced them to Patty, and I think at one point, it was a Saturday night, Patty and I were standing in line to get into a screening, and she's like, well, who are we going to see here? And I was like, oh, the same old people we see everywhere. And, you know, I think I eventually might have changed that to the same old tired people, and I truly don't mean that, because I love them very, very dearly. They are my community. They are my support, and I love them all, but by the end of the week, it was like, I already know you. Well, can't we meet somebody new?
Yeah, we've seen them all.
And thankfully, by that time, I had met so many people that, at first, I was sort of like clutching on the bow, like my safety line, because I'd never been involved in anything like this before. I'd gotten a little bit of notoriety on some of the serious stuff that I did, Gay Days last year, and going on the cruise where, you know, I first met people who knew everything about me, who I knew absolutely nothing about. But, I was just clutching on the bow for dear life those first few days. And by the end of the festival, I started going to things by myself, running into new friends, like, one of my very dear favorites was Drew Drogi. He just was the sweetest, most kindest person that I met at Altist. I just adore Drew. But, you know, meeting people like that, and I only had one real major faux pas, and that was with Kim Kitani. Both can explain that.
Well, I just before I get into that, I Patty knows what a introvert and what a secluded kind of a person I can tend to be, and I kind of forced myself to be out in the public. And she was very concerned about how I was going to be able to react with being out in the public like this. And luckily for me, she was able to take over and be the face of the documentary. But there was the one, obviously, you know, as much as I love Outfest, we did submit the documentary to Sundance. And I do have some friends of mine, Kimmy Tawney being one of them, who do work at Sundance, who did take the film in and were early adopters of it. However, it didn't fit in with the films that Sundance decided to focus on this year. All right, let's just put it bluntly. We didn't get accepted. And
okay.
Patty, as I was introducing her to Kim Utani, happened to mention that, yeah, we applied to Sundance, but they didn't accept us. And Kim's like, yeah, I work for Sundance. And Patty's like backtracking and asked, afterwards, I was like, yeah, the one who gave us the extension and actually helped me get this DVD, you know, considered for there. And so that was the one time that she kind of chewed on her toes a bit. But,
it was a little embarrassing. But I also did meet the programmer who really championed this film with Outfist. His name is Harry Vaughn, and he is just the most adorable young man you ever want to meet. So I have to say thank you to Harry.
In that, with all of my connections with Outfist, and I didn't send this down any special channels. I didn't ask for any special favors. The only favor that I asked for was that, you know, I have been a member, and so I do want you to seriously consider this. And come to find out from the volunteer programmers, that they had one of the nights where they sit down and actually watch through the short films. And our film was one that everybody pretty much agreed needed to be championed and needed to be sent on to the next level. And so I'm really thankful to the programmers at Outfest, especially the volunteers, who are the ones who championed this film and actually sent it on through and made it a part of the festival.
Well, now that the festival's over, where do we go from here? Are you going to other festivals? Are you taking a little bit of a breather? What's on deck for the two of you?
It's really funny that you should mention that, because since we've been on the phone, I got an email from Outfilm Connecticut, you know, saying that they're very interested and want us to submit. I've gotten a number of emails in that regard that people, now that the word has gotten out, are like, oh, wow, you're good enough for Outfest. You're good enough for us. We want to consider you. So there's a number of festivals that we are submitting to and sending the film off to. With that said, if any of your listeners are involved with film festival in their community, know the programmers, know the board of directors in your community, we would love to be a part of the film festival. Go to your board of directors. Go to your programmers. Go to your film festival and say, this is a film we want to see in our community. Program it and tell them to contact us. Otherwise, contact me through Facebook, contact me through Twitter, and I will do what I can to submit it to your communities. With that being said, we have submitted to a number. The other thing that I'm working on is I have some connections with an aggregator that is able to get short films and things of this nature on iTunes. And that is someplace that we're actually focusing on, because we can then, and forgive me, but we can then monetize this. And for as low as 99 cents, you can buy the documentary, watch it in the privacy of your home, and champion and help us in that way. So I don't have all of the details in regards to that yet, but that's something that we're working towards and trying to make happen.
Okay, so...
And I was going to say,
Patty, what about you?
I'm getting in a motor home with my two sisters at the end of this weekend, and we're going on a road trip to a family reunion in Modesto, and that ought to be fun. No kids, no grandkids, just me and my sisters and our dog hitting the road, and I'm looking forward to it. But I did have one possibly exciting thing happen to me today that Bo doesn't know about because I haven't told him, but somebody I met during Outfest has mentioned the possibility of maybe me being a part of a project they're doing, and I really can't say any more than that because
I saw that. That they had written a part specifically for you, and what you don't know is that I'm supposed to be having I'm supposed to go over to Charlie's house on Saturday, so I'll push that even further.
Yeah, it's exciting. Like I said, I made it be known, you know, I'm happy to put my face out there and represent the trans community, and I'm happy to work with people and, you know, whatever they want. It's just, you know, I'm on a fixed income. I don't have a lot of money, so, you know, people have to fly me wherever they want me, but I'm more than happy to go.
So maybe a nice guest starring recurring role on Orange is the New Black or something like that you'd be game for?
Oh, that would be so much fun. I love Candace Kane, and I would love to do something with her, and to work with the first trans-nominated person, Laverne Cox. That would be like the most exciting, biggest dream that could come true. So from your lips to the goddess's ear, Garrett.
Maybe we should have been pushing it a little bit harder during that inside looking panel and the talking with the director and producers afterwards. Because
well,
I mean, San Francisco. If you can't get into a show out of San Francisco about gay people, you know
where are you
going to
get in? Exactly.
Exactly.
Well, Bo Geno, don't you know, and Trucker Patty, you've been my very special, very, very special guest tonight, and I need to tell you from the bottom of my heart, I sincerely am so grateful to have spent time with you, shaking your hand and giving you hugs. Bo, I'd love to do lunch sometime soon. I know we've talked about that in schedules and stuff. I know it's on the show, but just for people who are listening on their phone tonight, where can people, social media, find you both? And then we're going to close the show.
Well, I'm at Trucker Patty on Facebook, and you can also find me, Trucker Patty, on Twitter.
And I'm at B. Geno on Twitter and Bo J. Geno on Facebook. Find me. I can't hide. I've tried.
Okay, there you go. Everybody, Patty, Bo, stay on the line real quick. And this is Hero, feeding song for our guest tonight by Patrick Allen Casey, recent guest on the show. And I know you'll love it. We'll be back tomorrow night for a very early Friday night dance party with rap star Lester Green calling from New York City. So 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 8 East. Look for the link tomorrow. And here is Patrick Allen Casey's Hero. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to
Rated G Radio.